All right. Hey everyone, welcome to Office Hours with Cloud Posse, your weekly dose of insider DevOps trends, AWS news, and Terraform insights, all sourced from our SweetOps community, plus a live Q&A you can't find anywhere else. It's March 19th, 2025. I'm your host, Eric Osterman. Real quick, I'm the founder and CEO of Cloud Posse. We're a DevOps accelerator for AWS infrastructure that helps teams deploy their software faster. And we do this by leveraging our over 200 Terraform modules that have been battle tested and downloaded over 100 million times. So if you or your team has been banging your head against the wall with Terraform, just head over to cloudposse.com/meet, answer a few quick questions, and you'll book a meeting with me directly. So how can you maximize today's session? Well, first off, our format is very informal. You can engage as much as you'd like and ask questions. If you're curious about any of our open source tools like Atmos or modules, this is a great place to ask. For those on the recording, we host these calls live. Don't miss out. Join us by going to cloudposse.com/officehours. Again, cloudposse.com/officehours. Now, I do have one ask. If you find any portion of today's session valuable, please share it with your team. Just head over to youtube.com/cloudposse, where you'll find today's recording as well as our back catalog of all the past episodes. So, with that said, let's jump into the announcements. All right. So the most sensational thing that came up this week was an accusation that a deal was spying on was it Ripley Rippling, which is another PEO type of product. So Rippling is if you've heard of JustWorks or ADT. Rippling is like one of those PEO companies. And Deel is similar, but I think they are based or focused predominantly internationally, making it easier to hire workers legally overseas, following the local laws and jurisdictions. So Deel, it's accused, had a spy essentially inside of Rippling that was passing along information to Deel. And they were able to, through some intelligent, like red team type tactics, figure out who the mole was, but also that this went all the way up to senior leadership, including the CEO at Deel. Of course, this is all alleged, and there's, going to be a lawsuit and trial and all that jazz according to it. It went something like this. They sent an email to investors of Deel alleging, I forget exactly what the thing was, and then internally at Rippling, they had created a private Slack channel only for this purpose that no one else on the entire at the entire company knew about. And then since they have Slack Enterprise, they have full search history and activity history of what happens in their Slack workspace. So after they had sent that email to I believe it was some investors at Deel, then the only people that would have known about that at Deel would have been the CEO and those investors. And yet, the search terms that started appearing in the Rippling search, in the Rippling Slack space, had those specific keywords in there. And the only way that those keywords would have reasonably been searched for in that time frame would have been in response to that letter that they had sent. Has anyone followed this more closely or has more to share? So, yeah, if you are working at an enterprise, just a reminder, if your team's using Slack, all that's logged. There's no privacy. No presumption of privacy when you're working within a company.
Yeah, I would just add, not just Slack, but
Yeah.
every company owned application You use even if you use like a browser on a company laptop or whatever, I would assume that whatever you're doing is being logged and cataloged.
Yeah. All right. Next one is
Wait,
one of the
are you
fun.
telling me that company Amazon Alexa that they sent me just because they liked me is actually there? So that when I speak ill of the leadership, they know? I don't believe it.
I hope that's not a true story.
I think I would assume in that case you're doubly being listened to by your company plus Amazon, but that's a whole
It's
different
using an
thing.
Amazon private instance on an outpost. It's different. It's going to be okay. It's very secure.
All right. Next one was one of the one of the common things in security and especially around encryption is that your encryption is only as good as your seed and the ability to generate random data. So if that seed is deterministic, your encryption is vulnerable. So to circumvent that, Cloudflare has done something fun over the years, which is they have things like lava lamps and a camera streaming from that to determine to generate the random data to seed the random generators. The Lisbon office now has a wall of these liquid plasma things that are going back and forth, and that's using to actually seed the random generators, I guess, for those data centers in that region.
Has anyone studied the randomness of
Fluid
these
dynamics.
devices, like the fluid dynamics of moving a device at the same rate all of the time? What are the number of possible patterns that you could generate from that?
The way they did the calculation for Cloudflare, you get basically the same numbers if you just like point a camera at the outside and watch the wind move, because it's like the at the end of the day, they just take the bitmap and then they just, that's the seed. It's not like,
Yeah.
could just be someone like walking in front and it'd be the same level. So,
Makes
yeah.
sense.
Next announcement was Tembo has announced something that they're working on, which is an AI agent specifically that acts as a DBA that can help you optimize your Postgres database. If you're not familiar with Tembo, Tembo is a managed Postgres provider, similar to RDS, but RDS on steroids because they support like every extension under the sun that you can install, and doing that in an easy way on a managed instance of Postgres. I believe the founders of Tembo come from Airflow, or what was the service that sold a managed version of Airflow?
It was an astronomer.
Astronomer, right. Yeah. So I thought that was pretty cool. I wonder if we'll see similar kinds of things like Datadog coming out with an agent that helps fix your cluster. Next announcement. Oops. Again. ICANN. So they announced the end of life or the sunsetting of Whois. And that will be. I didn't see what the actual date was. But Whois has been around forever. Its value has gone basically to zero as every DNS registrar offers an anonymization service. It's basically only good for ensuring or checking if a red domain has been registered or not. So that's being sunset in favor of RDAP, which is a protocol specifically for querying generic information about the top level domains. That is the end of an era. Well, this was
When are
fun.
we?
This was,
Oh, I
yeah.
was just going to ask, when are we going to get everyone to agree to sunset DNS with something that actually works? Like, should have some better way of querying all this stuff. That seems like the most antiquated thing we're using right now as a technology stack.
It works. When it works, it
OBGP, I
works well
think,
enough.
predates it, maybe.
Well, but like, what part about DNS? Like, I mean, we all know that when things go wrong, it's always DNS.
Right. It's all of those things.
Yeah,
That's the
but what's to
problem.
say that that thing that you replace DNS with won't be the same thing that's always wrong?
Well, I
Like
mean,
replacing IPv4, right?
well,
That's supposed to be done 20 years ago, right? Well.
yeah, I mean, saying like there are tons of engineering issues in a legacy system that make it not efficient when it's been scaled above like where it was ever designed to go. We shouldn't redesign it because we might redesign it with the same problems is a really bad like premise in my opinion. Like we should look at all the things that are broken in DNS and come up with a system that works, like so
DNS
that we
isn't
can do
that
that.
broken. It's complicated and it's hard to like wrap your hand, but I don't think it's broken. The same way that like Linux isn't broken, it's just sometimes hard to do certain things because like you don't get it, but it's like and you know it's hard for someone like sitting down to like bring up a website very quickly, although it's getting easier all the time. I
Yeah,
don't.
I don't know. I get DNS. Like I'm probably in the 1% understanding of DNS in the world, and I still think it's broken or like not designed all that well. Like making updates, but go ahead, make a real-time update to DNS for me.
That's the whole point. It's the whole point. There's no such thing as a real-time update. Everything needs to be
Well,
in TTL. Like that.
why? It
Because
is
the
real
reason
time. I
Google
want
can do that is
something's
because they have
broken. My
Spanner.
site is
Like,
broken. I want to now redirect the traffic somewhere else. I have to wait 48 hours for the whole world to catch up to a change I just made.
doesn't
Like,
this
that's
feel just like the
broken.
argument of are roads broken or self-driving cars broken, right? It's kind of one of those, it feels similar in the sense that there's a lot of infrastructure that you could give some people DNS and they would just break it, and then you give them the perfect solution, they'd still break that too. And also, like the reason why it's not as big of an issue at places like Google's because they have giant, like geosynchronous distributed databases for doing this. Like, that's a hard problem to be able to make a change globally very quickly. Like, that's something that was, you know, actually solved at a hyperscaler like 15 years ago. DNS is much older than that. Like, I think it's, I don't know, just because it seems like it should be doable now. There's a lot of ancient networking running like all over the world. And I don't know. I would much rather fix BGP propagation, like to like actually have some sort of cryptographically secure way to advertise routes instead of just like hoping that upstream is like happy with, you know, we'll just like let you do whatever you want so we don't
They
like bring
have
bad
it. It's
stuff. But
called filter prefixes.
yeah, but it's
I'm
still
joking. I'm
it's
joking. I'm
not
joking.
like
We can we
real.
they're not mutually exclusive. I'll agree with you that we should fix BGP too, but that doesn't mean we shouldn't also fix DNS in, 2025. So anyway, I didn't mean to get us off on a tangent. I
It's
was
all
just
good.
like, if we're looking at antiquated internet things, that's what popped into my head. Like, why don't we fix some of the other stuff that's broken at the core of the internet?
It just made me think of HTTP3 also, which has been around for a very long time. Was it mid-2000s at least? And I was surprised, I think it was on Hacker News, to learn that I think Golang and Nginx and a lot of mainstream languages and frameworks just don't yet really fully support it. And if they do, it's under experimental.
Curl has experimental, I think,
Yeah.
now, which is so weird because
Oh,
we think of like curl as like the
right.
arbiter of networking.
Yeah. If you're not in a browser and curl doesn't support it, it's just as well as it doesn't
Yeah.
exist because every package under the hood uses curl. That's the library.
Libcurl. Oh,
Well,
what's his name? Daniel Sternberg or whatever. He had an article on why it took them forever to do that. I don't remember what he said, but I know he wrote something.
Yeah. Well, if anyone finds that, we can share that. So this was a fun thing over the weekend, a little bit of a heart attack. TJ Actions, used by over 23,000 repositories, was compromised in a supply chain attack. Somebody had spoofed a commit, and the in a PR, that person had write access to the repo, and then the pull request with a spoofed commit was merged. The commit was spoofed from was it Renovate or Dependabot? That's why maybe it wasn't as obvious to spot, but let's face it, we're not digging in to look for little green check marks that every commit is signed, unless you have mandatory commit signing enabled for your organization or repository. So, a
And
few
if you
things.
use another, like on top of that, if you use any automation in getting like commit signing to get to work,
Yeah, that's a
it's
nightmare.
just a nightmare.
We've had to deal with that with like our we have a component updater service to help automatically update Terraform components, and we had to put in a little bit of extra work on that. Plus, it only works to do it conveniently. You have to use the GitHub APIs. What was the next thing on that? So, a lot of things came out of this incident. So first of all, what was the impact of this? So I believe some obfuscated code was made its way into main that would dump all the credentials in I don't know, memory or in the environment or in the context out in such a way they were present in the public logs of that job. Now, if you were using this in a private repo, the blast radius would have just been who had view access to your private repo. If it's a public repo, then it's, public to the world. The window in which this was vulnerable, I forget what the final timeline was here. So it was detected on March 14th at 4 p.m. and it was fully resolved by. March 15th at 10 p.m. UTC. In that time, what happened was GitHub basically took the repo offline and they rewrote the commit history to remove the nefarious commit that was there, and everything else now it should be hunky dory and continue working. Many repos stopped working during this time. If you were pinning your commits and you had pinned it at some time, before March, but I forget when it was actually when the commit was made, if they say here, but then you would have been safe. And this highlights just a whole bunch of issues that not everyone might be aware of as it relates to GitHub Actions, what you can do about it now, what GitHub, is doing about it. As well, not everything being available. So the first thing is to start pinning your all your GitHub actions to a commit SHA so that the mutable tags don't change. This is a tool here by Suzuki that helps you automate that at scale. It is a CLI called Pin ACT. Short for pin actions. And it'll go through, see everywhere you have a GitHub action, and automatically update the pin for you. An example of what that looks like is actually one that Suzuki opened up for Cloud Posse on our Atmos project. So if I go to GitHub workflows autofix, we are actually using the action that was compromised. But we are pinned to a commit SHA, so we were not affected by this particular incident. And the tool that does this is PIN-ACT, and it makes it convenient. Obviously, you can do this without it. The biggest complaint using commit when you're using commit SHAs like this is that, well, it's not really human friendly, and you can't, if you're not doing these friendly semantic versions as comments, you really have no idea to, well, no convenient way to quickly ascertain the version that you're on. What is GitHub doing about this? More generally speaking, I wish I had it handy, but on the GitHub Actions roadmap, they plan to enable immutable artifacts for actions. So you push an artifact of a GitHub action somewhere that cannot change. And that will bring trust into this ecosystem. Until that happens, we're really reliant on the network effects and that they're good Samaritans and with a profit motive out there scanning all of these repos to find it. You know what else is kind of cool? So this whole thing, this discovery was by Step Security, and anybody who was on office hours last week will know that we talked about Step Security. So it was just very coincidental that just a few days later they would discover a very significant exploit that would put them on the map for a lot more people.
I dropped the link to the roadmap item in chat.
Oh, thank you for that. So, are you, if you are concerned, if you're affected by this, someone has written a tool. I thought I linked it. Maybe I didn't.
On the GitHub Actions updates, did we cover a dependabot or how that handles updating commit shards as well?
Yeah, I think, well, I don't know. No, we didn't mention it, but it does support using commit SHA pinning as well. You're right.
Perfect, yeah, because for what it's worth, not only does it do the commit SHA, which makes sense, it's a Google native thing, but you know that little comment at the end where you can type in the V point, whatever it is? Dependable even takes care of updating that little comment as part of their PR. So I've dropped a link to one just from a couple of weeks earlier. And it's just super neat, not just because it's taking care of your SHA updates, but also you're not losing any of the information about which tag is connected to that SHA.
Yeah,
Always nice.
that is nice.
Until you run Dependabot and it updates you to the vulnerable version.
Yeah, that's exactly what I was thinking. It's like, yeah.
Yeah, so I guess that, yeah, there's a double-edged sword using commit SHA pinning, but combining that also with automation, you're still kind of SOL. But this is also, yeah, the.
Is there a way with Dependabot or Renovate or all the things to just be 2 weeks behind? Like, yeah, I want the latest thing, but like if I'm 2 weeks late, like it's not going to cause any big issue. And then like if something happens and it like gets up to whatever, or like every 2 weeks they say over the last 2 weeks, what should I like update to? And then it'll be the latest thing, but it only does like those updates every 2 weeks. So you don't have to like worry about like auto merging problematic things, because it kind of gets like, it's probably a fancy renovate thing you can pay for $1,000 a year or whatever. I'm sure
You're
that's an
spot
option.
on. I think there's like a cron schedule you can choose for e at
Yeah.
least independent, but you can do just do a cron schedule. And there's only three options, which isn't great. It's only daily, weekly, and monthly. But if you pick weekly, I guess you're only going to be behind by 7 days
I want
max.
no, rolling
yeah,
release, but
yeah.
2 weeks behind.
I was gonna say, if you run it every week, you're still vulnerable to day zero problems that just came out the day that you run it.
Yeah. True, true.
Yeah,
Very good point.
I want stable. I want the stable branch for all of it. I know that's not how these things work, that like that's effect. We think that V0 or V1 or whatever the like thing is stable, but it's not stable. I want stable.
We're all canaries today.
Yeah.
I guess on the side of, would you guys prefer, especially for the official things like actions, would you prefer to pin to SHAs or just choose V4, like the major one, so that if there is security patches, at least you can get those immediately without having to You can open a new PR, check commits, and all that.
Depends who it is and how much you trust
Right.
them. Like, I pinned a V1 and you introduce some vulnerability and make it, V0 dot, a 1.0.1 or whatever. I'll get that update and now I'll have that vulnerable code. If I pin to the SHA, I don't get that. But then obviously it's a lot more hassle to keep it up to date. If it's well known, well known blessed actions, if you will, like, if it's the GitHub official actions or, our cloud posse actions or whatever, I'm much more likely to pin to the major version than I am to
Right.
pin to it off of some guy I just found his GitHub action, on, by searching the marketplace, and it's got like 7 stars or whatever on it. I think there's a big difference of level of trust, but both of them are, both of them are risky. In either way, it's just what's your risk tolerance?
Fair. On that, I don't know if this is on one of the links. I was going through your slide. Do you have a link to the GitHub's new upcoming feature that they're put in public preview, which is immutable action tags? So the
Oh
immutable
no,
action tags.
that
Oh,
was
sorry.
announced now. I did not. I know they will work. Well, Matt, you shared a link. Let's see here.
Yeah, that's not the link that I shared. I shared the one where I
Oh,
mean,
it was on the roadmap you shared.
this was the planned immutable actions on the roadmap. It still says it's Q3 of this year,
Three.
so.
It is ways away, but it does seem to try and strike a balance between, hey, we want people to just pin to major versions or V4.5.1, but instead of having to pin to commit SHAs, the action tag itself is immutable. So you can no longer have something like renovate or malicious actors trying to push dodgy commits into existing tags, which
Yeah.
seems like a fair compromise. Not perfect, but gets you somewhere.
I don't know that, like, I get it, but I don't understand how this is better than SHA pinning, other than it's easier to read.
I bet that's genuinely that's the only thing I think.
Yeah.
It's just because it's
And
easier to read.
if you use a
Although
tool, it's the same.
it does mention a couple other things. Yeah, just like Eric's highlighting the build provenance and okay, just build provenance. I think that's it. Nothing else.
But it would still, I hope there's still a convenient way to do like major version pinning,
Oh, absolutely, yeah.
or a compensating way to do it with version ranges or something.
And for
Oh,
what
yeah,
it's worth,
that's cool.
it's neat seeing some of the actions. So even though it's only in public preview, GitHub themselves and a few of their tech partners have been using it already.
Oh,
And it's
really?
neat. Yeah, and you could go to, so here's a link to just the probably the one everyone knows, action slash checkout. And
Yeah.
this is their immutable tags page. And it has the wee tags at the top. It's immutable. That's going to be always the case. And if you go to the code tab on the top left, top left tab of the code. Oh, way up.
Oh,
Yep, there we go. And on the right-hand side, if you scroll down a wee bit under packages, yeah, there you go. That little checkout, the one with the plain icon next to it, that's the immutable version of it.
That's cool. OCI is just really awesome for all these kind of use cases. We're dabbling with it in Atmos, and I'm excited that this is how they're going to be doing it in the end with packages.
It almost seems
Except
like they
for,
should have been here for here much earlier. It took them a while.
yeah,
Yeah.
except for what I pointed out earlier, Eric, that.
Well, that ours hap the artifact that we published happened to be private.
No, yeah, any private artifact though, like that you have, you must use like the GitHub token. You can't use like SSH and other ways to download
Oh,
it,
okay.
which is like, I don't know, that seems like a step backwards to me. Like,
Well, yeah, possibly. Yeah, I do find from an automation perspective, SSH is more cumbersome, but I guess if you already have it set up and working with,
yeah.
one password as you do, that's obviously very nice.
Yeah.
But all right. I think some way of some SSH-like convenient way agent almost type approach for keys would be welcome, I think, at this point. The standardized way of doing that, but not just for SSH,
Yeah,
like for
we
the
need
GitHub
Git.
token, yeah,
Yeah.
for one password tokens, all et cetera.
Yeah, we need a GitHub machine token, like machine to machine token, like to exist somewhere that can be issued automatically based on things.
Thanks for sharing that, Rishabh. This is really interesting. I'll take a closer look at it later. All right, where was I? Yeah, so that was that. Oh, and this is another just super awesome thing that came out as a result that was popularized or announced in one of the news posts I saw relating to this. If I grok this correctly, this solves a long-standing problem on GitHub. You know, the GitHub token, one of the best things about it, the automatic one that you get, is in your workflow, you can just set the permissions you need. If that merges into main and is approved, now that workflow can have those permissions, and those permissions are automatically assigned to the GitHub token that is persists only for the duration of the execution of your workflow. If you work in an organization, chances are you're going to have lots of repositories. But that token, there's nothing you can do about it, is narrowly scoped to exactly the repo that you're in. So you still have to break every best practice and create like a personal access token, or create your own GitHub app and then set. And then set those secrets in your environment secrets, not saying the work the repo secrets or org secrets, but in the environment secrets, and then use a convoluted process to get a short-lived token from that that you can then use to access the other repos. Can't we just have cross-repo tokens? So that is what I believe Octo STS does. I believe it is an entirely free app. You can install it in your organization. Whatever permissions you give to this app are the maximum permissions this app is capable of doing for these short-lived tokens. Then you can have a configuration file that specifies the trust and how this app can be used. Then in your workflows, you can request a short-lived credential and then use it in your subsequent steps. So now you have a way at scale to get repository tokens that work, short-lived repository tokens across your org with governance ensured by this ChainGuard STS YAML file.
Yeah, so the really nice thing about the GitHub one is that that token expires at the end of your GitHub job run. I wonder when the Octo STS ones actually expire.
Yeah, let's see. So you can have mandatory steps in your workflow that run at the end of a job to clean up. I don't know if they
Sure.
do any sort of invalidation on those. Let's see. Yeah, I'm not seeing it immediately.
Because if you like, as an example, this is great. I can issue tokens that expire after an hour.
Yeah.
Well, they're still vulnerable for an hour then, afterwards if they leak somehow.
Yeah, let's see. I'm not sure. I haven't seen any mention of the time to
Yeah,
live for
I
that.
didn't see it anywhere when my quick scan, so I didn't know if you had seen that.
No, yeah, I'll be honest. I just assumed they wired it up so it somehow it expires at the end of your run by how it's used, but that makes, as they say, assuming makes an ass out of you and me.
Yeah.
Can it be related to how the claims are gotten that you can set the time to live on the claim.
I don't know.
Well, that one.
Yeah, there's an expires at field that you can pass in.
That's cool. Not quite as nice, obviously, as you said, Matt, the built-in.
Because then you have to guess like how long is my workflow going to run for at max? And then I have to create a token that at least is that long.
Matt, no, you just need to add now another step that calculates the average execution time and use that out. No, I'm joking.
And keeps updating the config based on the last 10 runs. Yeah, exactly.
That's the one thing I miss about GitLab was they have the runner tokens, the JDBTs that are like this, but it follows your maximum pipeline run in GitLab, so it expires as soon as the pipelines are done.
Yeah, that's how the native GitHub tokens work too, except they can never work cross repo. Yeah, that's the big like if they just like made that one of the configuration options or whatever, like so that they could federate against themselves, just like you can do with like Cloud Federation, you can get temporary credentials there. It would be nice like to be able to say allow access from these repos to my repo, and then they could be those other repos should be able to request a token in their runs. That would be great.
Yeah, we've talked about this before, Matt. It's weird that they support it with AWS, Azure, GCP, but they don't support it with themselves. All right. Next one. So deep merging has been a common requested thing in Terraform. Cloud Posse has our Terraform provider utils that has a deep merge function. Apparently, Mart of formerly HashiCorp, now of Spacelift and OpenTofu, has come up with a standalone Terraform provider that implements provider functions, presumably, that enable the deep merge capability. We implemented it as a data source because it long preceded the ability or availability of functions in Terraform.
What is this deep merge that you're talking of?
So if you are a common pattern in Terraform or people using Terraform is to create a config file. So you have a config file like in YAML or in JSON, and you want to use that now to configure your root module or some aspect of your runtime. One of the nice things about having external config files, you can download that from S3 or some other endpoint or generate it from another command, all sorts of options. But the problem is you can't merge that with another configuration. Terraform has a very crappy merge function, which just replaces any top-level keys. It doesn't do a deep recursive merge, for example, in a structured map. So this deep merge under the hood is presumably using Merge Go, which is a power. I'm just It's just a conjecture, too, which is a powerful way of doing merging across arrays and maps in Go. So this is what we do in Atmos. That's how we get all of our stack configurations to work the way they do, is that we are deep merging those configs. So from a primitive standpoint, you can do something similar using this in Terraform.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Where was that release that they, is it just under his personal space? Oh yeah.
Oh,
Yeah.
it's under apparent. Yeah, it's under
Yeah.
his personal space, apparently, Mark. It's 2 days old, so it's definitely ready for production. All right. Another one. I think we probably talked about this on office hours previously last year at some point, but this was trending on Hacker News today, so I thought I'd bring it up again. It's a nice little simpler find util on the command line you can use. It doesn't have quite as obtuse or esoteric of a command line syntax. If you've ever used find, it's a pain. It differs based on whether you're on Mac or on Linux. The order in which you specify the parameters can really mess up what you find. If you've tried to use it with a built-in exec command, you always have to, end your arguments with a semicolon, but remember to backslash that semicolon. So I think this makes it just easier to use with a little bit of color that doesn't hurt.
So just backing up to
Yeah.
the provider, I just took a quick look at the source code, and while I love the idea behind it, and looking at the test suite in there and what's been done, he wrote his own merge function to do this. I guarantee there are a million scenarios that are not going to pass. The test suite for any like package for merging Go structs like under the hood that actually works is it like extremely complicated, at least in our experience when we've tried to do this.
And so I also stand corrected. It is not using merge go.
That was what I looked at it. I was like, huh, nope, this is his own merge implementation basically. So I love to be wrong on this one, but I think just working on all the stuff we've done with Atmos and seeing how hard it is to get like structs to merge from like various sources, I'd be dubious that this is going to work in a lot of cases.
It's also not, there's no universal. The other thing we struggle with is there's no universal approach for merging, like some, like lists, for example. Sometimes you want to replace them, sometimes you want to concatenate them. If you're concatenating them, do you want to prepend or append them, and so forth. Next, we talked about that. Oh yeah, this was that pin ACT tool. And then this was kind of interesting. So Pulumi has an experimental or a POC repo demonstrating how you can execute Terraform modules directly or natively from Pulumi. Probably good if you are bridging the gap or moving from one world to a new world in Pulumi and want to leverage some of the existing Terraform you have. I think it's interesting from Cloud Posse's perspective as well. If we at some point can leverage a lot of our existing investment in Terraform modules with Pulumi. And last one is ECR announcing ECR to ECR pull-through cache. Pull-through cache is on ECR is a great feature that we use a lot. However, it is so what feels like artificially limited in terms of the number of upstream Docker registries it can pull from. It isn't just any Docker registry. So it was kind of ironic that you couldn't do ECR to ECR pull through. Then the question is, why would you want to do that? Well, it's kind of interesting. I think one of the scenarios is, as they mentioned here, pulling across regions or accounts. So you only need to really publish your artifacts in one region. The other is if you want to ensure that each account has propriety over its images, and if those images are lifecycled or otherwise in an upstream registry that they don't go away. So you have a copy of it in your local registry in that account. Simplifies the permissions model so that you can, scope, so you have control over the scope of access to those images in the container registry within that account, and the people using that account can control that. And that's all I got. Any other the Google announcement? Oh yeah, we did miss that one. Thanks, Nena. So everyone's Probably seen this also in their inbox. Pretty big deal, no pun intended. So Google just acquired Wiz, Wiz being one of the industry leaders for security monitoring and compliance. I don't think the company's that old. I believe it was started by some entrepreneurs with a military background from Israel. They turned down a $23 billion offer that I couldn't believe they turned down last year. It shows why they're billionaires, and I'm far from it. So it paid off. And not only that, all cash deal. So that's a pretty remarkable transaction.
Yeah, I think they're, I think it, I read they were 5 years old. I think they started in 2020. And then they acquired a company that did, that provided most of the tech, I think, for 50 million.
Really?
Yeah. So,
I saw something about that. I didn't read too deep into it. That's interesting.
so
And
here's, oh,
yeah.
sorry, go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say, and since Google sunsets a lot of products after about 7 years, you can expect another 2 years or so out of this product. That's good.
Yeah, I was about to say, you know, how many people that are using Wiz for security over their AWS accounts are going to be happy doing that when it's Google owned?
Anyone here actually using it?
We have a few customers that are using it, enterprise, like large enterprise customers.
Yeah, I would say it's the most common name that comes up in the category for us. So I've been really surprised when I've read through like the Hacker News comments on this. There's so many there that this is the first I've ever heard of this company. But yeah, it's come up a lot for us.
Yeah. I don't know. That seems like that seems like a they're gonna lose a significant customer base that's using it in their AWS environments, but maybe Google doesn't care. They might have this purpose for something else.
To find out who all the customers are in AWS.
Yeah. It's worth $32 billion.
Yeah, as Andrew says, bought by Google equals a death sentence.
I don't know. $32 billion is too much to spend to kill some product. It's literally a third of Google's cash on hand, and Google has, you know, a
Wow.
lot, you know, one of the largest cash on hands of anyone in, you know, in the world, you know, so, or of any organization in the world, I should say. I think there's like 15 tech firms that when you combine them, they have over $1 trillion in cash, and Google is one of those, obviously. They have like about 100 million.
Not to self, when I do my startup, I have to make sure that I don't have any pricing on my site and always have to just get a custom quote to raise the value of things. So you can't even like see how much this stuff costs. I love it. So
Yep.
I mean, I think that's true of most enterprise products.
Yeah.
Not if you're vibe coding. So.
Oh yeah. How much, give me an exact price quote for how much your LLM costs for an enterprise.
Depends if the new one's come out that's beaten it already. So.
Yeah.
Let's see here. Middle action in this roadmap issue is. Oh, yeah. Is this the. Here, I think Jeremy found the write-up. He shared it on where we are at with HTTP3 now.
HTTP3, yeah. Which I think is further than I knew. And that article is old.
Yeah, it's a few years old. All right. Any open-ended? This is the part of the office hours where we turn the mic over, and is there anyone who has questions that we can get answered? You have access to, nearly 20 brilliant minds here.
I just, before we leave the whiz thing, I just wanted to really quickly say that to put it in perspective, the acquisition is 20 times the size of what they acquired YouTube for. Think YouTube was 1.6 billion.
Yeah, which seemed enormous at the time. Now $1 billion is just thrown around like that, like change.
Yeah, you're just brushing by the 0.6 billion, which is $600 million.
60% more.
I once worked for a very large bank, and the CEO and CTO were having sorry, the CFO and the CTO were having a town hall, and they were talking about the budget for a year. And one guy said, next year the budget is going to be $1.7 billion. And the other guy said, oh no, he's one guy said 1.3 billion, and the other guy said, you haven't seen the latest version, it's 1.7. And the CFO was like, oh, okay. And he just kept talking. And I was like, they're talking about $400 billion, like it didn't matter at all. Like, and the CFO wasn't surprised, like, oh, you raised your budget by $400 million. But that was way back in the day when people were spending, money like it didn't matter. But I was still always have been shocked by that. But it's amazing how expensive things have become.
Yeah. Any questions? Terraform, see, I created projects morning on a whim for pre-caching Terraform provider versions and Docker images for downstreaming Terraform provisioning pipelines. All right, let's take a look at this.
This is a precursor to my question, is that is this like a ridiculous thing for me to even put out there? Is that like something that anyone else has run across where you're running many, many Terraform pipelines and re-downloading various provider versions over and over and over and over again? And is this something that should even be a concern? Or is there a way that you are handling it within your projects? That makes
We're
sense.
using the GitHub cache action that we run to save the providers there. It's not perfect, but if you have a lot of reuse, then it works.
You can also you can also, if you're trying to do this generically for all of your pipelines, because the cache version only works like in the same repo. If you're trying to do it generically, you can look at the Terraform CLI docs. They provide a way for you to provide a file system based cache of any provider. So you can just download all the providers you need, put them in a directory, and then essentially point to that when you run Terraform by setting it in your Terraform RC file or whatever. And then you don't have to you don't have to run like Terraform like init to download them all and then cache it that way. You can literally just like get a copy of them from wherever you want, put them in that folder, and then point to that folder as the way to do it. And then you can, however you want to distribute that, it's just files at that point.
Sounds way more pro than my janky stuff.
Yeah. And I can drop a link really quick to the docs on that.
Also, if anyone is using GitHub Actions and caching, we've noticed a tremendous, I forget, I think one of the engineers said it was like a 10x performance boost. With the Magic Cache offered by Runzon, which uses just your own S3 bucket. So imagine that. Like I've always been surprised at how slow the GitHub cache is. They must be using Windows on the back end to host it or something. But the S3 cache for GitHub Actions makes it work. work as fast as you'd expect a cache to work. Plus, you don't have the enormous cost burden that comes with GitHub's cache. So why this happens to work well for us is the way we are running Terraform. So we have it by component, and the cache is by component, and the components typically have the same providers. So long as you aren't using tons of different versions of the provider or different versions of your component, the providers will probably be the same most of the time.
Right. Although the way that we're doing the cache, we end up caching the same provider over and over and over again because it gets copied into the init of all the module, and then the module, if it referenced another module, it will make another copy of it that way,
Right,
et
okay, I
cetera.
see what you mean, yeah.
So that's why I'm saying if you just take the
Yeah.
unique set that you have and download them once, you can restore just the plugins once and point to that
That makes
directory.
sense.
And then you can get them all from there, and it will be much faster.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense.
Yeah. Also, if you think about Terraform RC file, dot Terraform RC file as package.json. So you think like it's just the same way it works. You can define your own paths for the providers. And then you can cache them whether with the GitHub cache or the magic cache here on RunZone, which I didn't test actually. So yeah, you can define this one and you can control where to cache that on GitHub. That's what I'm doing actually, but I want to test this magic cache from RunZone. Yeah.
Yeah, are you using RunZone, Mohammed?
No, not yet.
It only works, but yeah, just full disclosure, it only works on RunZone, and they do something really clever. In they've reverse engineered essentially how the GitHub caching protocol works, and then intercept those requests and send it to their proxy, which sends it to S3, your S3 bucket.
You get the source code to that if you sponsor them, though, right?
I think so.